Welcome in, listener, to another episode of The Road Less Traveled. I am your host, DB, and on today's episode, we're going to go with part two of my I have now been made to be a wildland firefighter due to my imprisonment. If you guys are just joining us, definitely check out the introduction to this podcast. It is titled Introduction. It's on my Podbean website or any of the links in case, you know, you're just tuning in if you're just jumping in. So to springboard off of the last episode, I had gone through firefighting training. I had been dispatched to California on my first fire, which turns out it was a major fire. It was a horrifically big fire. One person passed away on that fire. Over 160 homes were burned. Let me give you some other facts. I was kind of curious, so I, you know, Wikipedia'd, which is more or less accurate, because I was curious. You know, I wasn't a black hat at the time, which a black hat is one of the crew leaders, if you will. They're still an inmate, but they literally wear a black fire helmet, a hard hat. That way, you know, like, okay, that's your squad leader, that's your crew leader, you go to that guy, because just above that is your crew boss, which is the more or less inmate supervisor, who is, like, you know, obviously in control of us as a fire crew. There was a lot of responsibility within that. Like, it's such a strange situation, because a lot of those people, like the guys I was, you know, fighting the fire with, a lot of those dudes obviously didn't want to be firefighters. Like, you kind of just get made to do that. While you do your time, like, that is your penance. So a lot of them fucking hated it. I mean, but then there were times where, I don't know, there was like a sense of accomplishment, or like maybe even camaraderie. Like, we did work well together at times. There was a, like, we did good work every time because we had to. Like, there wasn't you could pick and choose kind of thing. But it wasn't always, like, begrudgingly done. There were times where people were doing it with pride. People were, like, really fucking getting it. And that was cool to see. So, anyway, here's some facts skipping backwards. I always am all over the place. So, Mendocino Complex Fire, it was a large complex, and I'm quoting here, complex of wildfires that burned in Northern California for more than 3 months in 2018. It consisted of two wildfires, the River Fire and Ranch Fire, which burned in Mendocino Lake, Calusa, and Glen counties in the U.S. state of California, with the Ranch Fire being California's single largest recorded wildfire at the time, until the Dixie Fire in 2021. Anyway, we're just going to skip forward. So, ba-ba-da-ba-ba. The fires burned for a combined total of 459,123 acres before they were, you know, 100% contained. Dear God. So apparently there were hot spots that persisted until 2019 in January the next year. That's wild. So the fires combined, the 100 whatever I quoted earlier, was from one of the counties. So it was a total of 280 structures, which was like $257 million worth of damage, property damage of $56 million, and then $201 million for fire suppression costs. And that probably will be its own episode. Like, we did get paid to go out on these fires. We got paid the second the fire call basically went off. Like, once we went beyond the gate, beyond the prison gate, you know, and we're checked out and everything, like, dude, we're firefighters now. Gotta switch gears. We're no longer inmates. I mean, we're still inmates. Like, you can't just leave. You can't just do what you want. But we are looked at as firefighters. And so there was that responsibility within that. And so we were paid $1 an hour, which does not sound like a lot, but I was actually kind of shocked that we got paid at all. I mean, I obviously had done wrong and, you know, deserved to be in prison. So to me, my view or perspective on everything was I saw this as a incredible way to pass time. Like, this to me was a great thing. I was able to go outside, have a kind of a, it was a much different sense of normalcy for me. But, you know, people that weren't in prison fight fires, you know, like there's firefighters out there. There's all sorts of jobs out there. So anyway, firefighting just happens to be one of them. People that choose like criminal, that's not a fucking career path. You can't just choose criminal. I know people do, but you know, it's not a video game. You just don't roll up your NPC and then that's what you can pick as your backstory. Like, I would like to be a criminal, please. So people should stop picking that. It's a terrible lifestyle to go down. Seems fun at first, but usually gets you caught up, as all the people around me can verify. Well, not around me currently. I'm just in my apartment, obviously. So back in this story times. So we got sent out on this fire. I don't even know what day. It was probably like July, August, perhaps. I don't exactly remember when we got dispatched because like so many different changes had happened in such a short amount of time. Like I, you know, got told while I was in maximum security prison, hey, you're, you know, tomorrow you're leaving on a bus and you're going to camp. And I'm like, woohoo, cool. Going to conservation camp, minimum security prison. Great. You know, take the horrendous bus ride up, get to this crazy place, this camp, see a dude fucking stabbed a lot. Then get told you're going to be a firefighter. Hooray. Watch a video where a bunch of people die. Into the Brave. Great movie. And then get told, hey, by the way, you're also going to California. You're getting dispatched to like this massive fire, this way crazy out of control thing that you have no preparation for. And I'm like, this is a lot of stuff to handle at the same time. Like, so it's kind of crazy looking back because going through the process, like, I kind of just accepted it. Like, I had no control over any of those things. So I just was like, okay, like, this makes sense. I'm going to go do that. Let's go. And because of that, like, I don't know, kind of yes man attitude, I had amazing experiences. I had some really fucking horrible experiences, which were also that fire. I think I told on the last episode, like, my calves, oh my God, my ankles, my muscles. Dude, I thought those things were going to snap like rubber bands. Like, gone. Just pink, pink. And then you just see me rolling down the mountainside, which we did have some of those, we did have some rolls. And thank God nobody got hurt. We had some tools lost, like where chainsaws are flipping down, which not like chainsaws, like revving down, like, oh my God, look out. Those things all have safety guards. They have triggers. Not worried about that, but a flying metal object with like that motor on the end doing barrel rolls down a mountainside or logs or what, boulders, rocks, etc. That happened. Like, we're cutting a fire line in the absolute fucking middle of nowhere. Like, we're in California on the mountainsides, valleys, like hills, everything going, just making a path. Usually we had to hike and drive. So we drove our off-road buggy as far as we could get. But at a certain point, like, there's just nowhere vehicles can get. So we load up our 50-pound fire pack filled with 6 canteens of water, 2 MREs, 3 if you stole one because you're an inmate. Duh. Convicts. What can you do about that? And you know what? I had to get along to get along for a while. So, like, I mean, I don't care, whatever. More MREs, that's more food. I love that. Some of them had candy. Good for us. Like, I don't mind. I'm not going to do the stealing, but I'm not going to be the one to also say, no, I'm good. Because if you don't have a little bit of Skittles, why is that guy not having Skittles? I offered him Skittles. Why the fuck is that guy not taking my Skittles? So, you just, you know, I love Skittles. Why would I say no to Skittles? That's great. Thank you. Or beef jerky. You got, anyway, so, just getting off track. But that is kind of a point. Like, you're a fire crew, but you're also all in prison, by the way, guys. So I've seen people get fucked up, people that are telling or not going along. A lot of these people smoke cigarettes, and they would follow our crew boss around and pick up his chew that he was spitting out. They would dry it out overnight, or they would, like, heat up foil to, like, try to hasten the process. They would then roll it with whatever paper they had, which usually they would use Bible paper because it was so thin. So they just kept, you know, writing kites to religious services, getting a bunch of Bibles and just tearing those things to pieces. I'm sure the Reverend was like very happy, or whoever hands out Bibles. Yeah, but they were smoking them up. So super disrespectful. Anyhoozle. Yeah, so they would dry that out, and he caught wind to that. He pissed on it a few times, he said, which was absolutely disgusting. And again, we're getting even further off track, but these stories just kind of seem to open up, and I can't stop. I don't normally think about any of these things anymore. Like, the podcast has been super fun because I get to like unpack these little boxes of memories and kind of sort through them. And I mean, like I said, I'm painting a lot of this in a positive light, but getting back to like the physical exhaustion, I'm going to spoil this, guys. There's going to be a part three to this, 'cause I know I'm going to ramble on for 20 more minutes and get a few stories in, but I'm going to do the part three separate next week. And it's going to be a special episode. That's all I'm going to say. It's a special one. Okay. It's going to be super fun. But so the physical, like, I don't know, toll that a fire takes on you. So we're carrying these 50-pound packs, but we also have a tool, which I mentioned. I was using a more or less a pickaxe, which it was to snag roots out in case, like, say, my Sawyer, his chainsaw, for example, couldn't get through whatever brush or bush was going on there. I could dig it up, and usually the soil was so soft and loose in California, we could just pull those things out by hand, which was awesome. So I would just go in, ding, ding, phoo, and then we just throw them off to the side into the green, not the black. I mentioned this before, but again, don't throw stuff into the active fire area. Don't do that. Don't throw more fuel, things that can ignite, towards the fire. Super dumb idea, guys. But anyway, we had to be told that. Throw it into the green. Throw it into the green. And you're always like working with your view towards the fire. This fire, by the way, is so fucking big that you're not going to be near the fire. You're not going to be like, I was on a lot of fires, like a ton of fires. And smaller fires, you can be working like right up in there on like flame on your face kind of stuff. Or like medium-sized fires or even large-sized fires. But this, something of this scale is beyond large. It is a massive, gigantic fire. This is a fire that I don't want to spoil too many details because I guess actually I can go do this story because it's not part of the special episode. Fun. Okay, so cool. I was telling somebody this story actually today. Fire, I didn't quite know, but I should have. Like, fire, it can get so hot that it can create its own weather system. Like, it just can burn so large that that entire area is burning up all that oxygen and it's converting it into something else, guys. All that's being displaced. Like, that hot air and cold air combining is creating its own weather system. And so here's how I got to find that out. This is like, by the way, a 2-week fire. So I'm just going to bounce all over the place because this is day like six. With this incident, the first few days, like, we cut a bunch of line, that mountain burned down, we lost that. Like, this fire is racing, it is huge, like, it's going in all directions, so we're miles ahead of it usually, trying to contain it. That's what wildland firefighters do. You got tankers doing drops directly on it, trying to stop the advancing line, dropping, you know, fire retardant. And then you have bulldozers that are trying to use natural advantages, like, say, roadways that are either dirt or paved. Like, that's a natural fire break right there. They're trying to then, say, widen that by cutting down the trees or brush, by scraping that with their bulldozers in that area. But it's still pretty hard to remove trees. Like, we are the guys that remove trees generally, unless they had some incredible equipment, dude. California has really cool fire equipment, but they have to. So, like, you're seeing chippers, like, that look straight out of Transformers. Like, I know, like, any of the Autobots or Decepticons would love to have some of this weaponry. It's incredible. They just have these giant grinding, because they're feeding like pine trees into this. These are like 100 foot-long pine trees that are just getting dropped into the gullet of this grinder, and this Decepticon's just going while we're all, you know, just looking on or walking by because we have to, you know, get into the worst possible spot ever. These guys have a great job. Like, their job's pretty fun. They get to show up with their massive equipment, get to go beep, 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 and then just, like, cut down a bunch of stuff and then chip it down. Meanwhile, we're, like, bombing off of cliffs, going into, like, the worst places ever. We always show up coming back to camp looking fucking wrecked. Because, so, California system, and this is why this was so exhausting, because we would pull, like, 30-some-odd-hour shifts. Like, we would get up at around 4:35, like, eat breakfast, disoriented as shit. It's freezing because it's California in the morning and summer's not, like, fully kicked in, kind of. Like, it still gets pretty damn cold. Like, we're not acclimated because we're, you know, coming in. So, anyway, yeah, IC is just, like, cold as hell because, I mean, you can't just have an indoor thing, usually. There was some indoor stuff, but usually we had to go outside for feeding and whatnot, but it was cool food. The food, that was the best part. Going from prison food to basically all you can eat catered event where you also have to earn your meal by fighting like fire. It was worth it. It was very, very Hunger Games. I loved it. And so for, Jesus, yeah, we're pulling like 30-hour shifts, and we barely get to sleep because it's supposed to be 24 on, 24 off, and that's just how we alternate. And for California, we do 14 days there. We do two weeks, and we have basically 16 total days, depending on how far the fire is, like the distance, because we will travel, like. When we don't have many fires burning in our area, our inmate crew can get dispatched across the state lines, which is pretty cool to me. We can go all sorts of places. Do not know if that's part of, you know, other states' prisons where they have conservation camps where they have firefighters. Don't know. So, at least for ours, that's how it was. And I just thought it was like supposed to be 24 on, 24 off, but it wasn't. It was about 30-ish on because all the travel time, getting woken up, getting to the location of the fire, getting briefed, getting all the stuff. It just like, and then finally getting to your work site. The problem was like we had to go so far to get to our work site. Sometimes it was miles and miles and miles away. And sometimes we had to spend the night there. Like we, you know, thankfully camped back or to where at least our fire buggy was. And then we just rolled out, tents and sleeping bags. Sometimes we just slept under the stars and tarps, which I loved that experience. That was actually my favorite part of the fires. Being outside, sleeping under a California sky and falling asleep to the stars. It was honestly, that night sky just was some of the best memories I've ever had in general. Cause I really appreciate that stuff. I love it. You know, you get to take a moment to reflect, you get some solace, even though you're surrounded by people, like you get to withdraw into your own mind and you get to think. And some of it, you know, was regretful. And so, but a lot of it was hopeful. I was looking towards the future, a thing that I couldn't quite imagine. And right now I think it's pretty great. I love it right now. I got about a year till I'm done with parole. But I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. So, day six. I know, I've gone all over. But at least I'm tying the threads together, right, guys? I'm picking up the through line, at least. So, day six. This time, we're going to do a back burn. And weirdly enough, like, we are coming in as, you know, the outside guys, if you will. Like, we were hired on, contacted, because Cal Fire is a massive, just huge, huge fire department. Cal Fire is a massive thing because it's not just one fire department. It is a multitude of fire departments, and it has, I believe, federal funding, and it got rebranded from, I cannot remember, but, like, it got turned into, like, this incredible, like, massive organization called Cal Fire. Completely rebranded, whatever. So that huge like operation also needs outside resources. Like Cal Fire can't fight fires in multiple places. Like it's, you know, resources get spread thin. So they will contact outside states, usually obviously neighboring states. You got Arizona, Utah, Nevada, Oregon, places like that, like anywhere around and even further if they want to fly in people. Like we were sending people to freaking Australia, which for one of their massive fires, and that was always a joke going around prison, like maybe we can go. So obviously does not happen, like that's not gonna happen. But we have, at least within like those range of areas, like we could theoretically get dispatched to. And so oddly enough, when we went to, for whatever reason, when we went to California, we pulled rank. Like our crews got upgraded to, oh man, I'm totally blanking right now. It was basically whatever the second level of this thing is. I'm sounding kind of stupid, but I just like completely lost my thought on that. But we did pull rank. Now, I'm not saying like I got to make decisions or anything, but it was my crew boss and his partners, because there were several of the inmate crews there with, you know, free staff, as we called them, just, you know, regular people where their job happens to be actual firefighting, and then also running inmate crews. And so we had four of those crew bosses there, and they all pulled rank. And so they were being asked to do this backburn, like taking the responsibility of it. And we had broken off to where it was going to be my crew and another crew, and we were going to supervise this backburn. And like, for some reason, our crew bosses were like kind of uncomfortable with the idea, and they did let us know in advance. They're like, we don't really want to do this. Like, this is sketchy terrain. Because they did train us, and I did pay attention to all those things, and I do have my notes still. Like, you had to learn what was known as your 10s and 18s, and it was like 10 things you don't like ever fucking do, and then 18 things where you should probably really pay attention to these things. And one of them was to, you know, be like wary of a fire that you haven't scouted yet. If you've never gotten eyes on this fire, you don't quite know where it's at. And you don't want to be in country that hasn't been seen in daylight, which means, you know, surveying the land, knowing the area. Like if you haven't gotten eyes on it yet either in daylight, like actually scouted out this area, then again, you don't want to be too hasty in your actions. You want to be careful because you might have a fire that just like gets out of control and whatnot. So that was unfortunately two of those things were working against us because we just showed up. Like we just showed up and these, like presumably these other firefighters, you know, had eyes on this fire and knew what was going on because this was their region. We were just being sent to help them. And so what we were going to do was we were going to line out the 24 inmates out in a very long line with, you know, at least arm length, if not, you know, a little more spacing down in a long line. And we would face all in one direction so we could observe this other firefighting crew basically doing a backburn, which they would accomplish with drip torches that were more or less kerosene lanterns that could drip down kerosene onto the ground that was lit on fire. And it would literally drop just fire droplets that would help catch, you know, the dead and down, which is just like dead leaves that have fallen off the trees or those like pine needles and whatnot. Those things catch fairly quickly and then they start, you know, slowly spreading. So they were doing that. With several drip torches, excuse me, they had, you know, their own guys lined out and they all started at roughly the same time. I think it was like four drip torches. But then you had these two or three other guys that, so I'm at the very end of the line, by the way, giving you some context. I forgot to paint that. I'm at the very end of the line. Like I'm the very furthest from the crew buggy. And, you know, we got the quick briefing. We don't like this situation. Cool, whatever. We'll get lined up in a long line. We'll just keep eyes on this. And if you, you know, see anything that's like, I don't know, getting out of control, if you see the fire basically jump the line, like beyond you, going towards you, like if it jumps that line, because again, we want a back burn. We want this fire that is, from what we've been told, 2 miles away to slowly combine with this other fire, or we want to basically, hopefully, burn off this little area. So when the fire, by the time the fire does catch up, this is already black and can't burn anymore. And boom, we at least contain this side. But so I'm at the very end, the absolute very end, and I see these dudes shooting fucking flare guns into the tree canopy, like just going f-tum, f-tum. And I don't know if that was like normal, because that's, I mean, I've never been in this situation before. I don't know what the fuck is normal. I'm just being told what to do, and I'm very tired. I haven't slept for 2.5 years at least because of the whole prison thing. My fault, I know. And now I'm a firefighter. I'm very tired. I don't normally carry all this weight or walk this amount of like 16, 20 miles a fucking day. Holy God, guys. So I'm watching these dudes shoot off these flares, and I'm kind of wondering, like, if that's normal, because, you know, now middles of the trees are catching fire, tops of trees are catching fire, and it doesn't quite, like, seem, like, too bad until everything just, like, gets eerily quiet. Like, there was rustling in the trees. I don't know if you've ever been in the thick of a California forest, but it is a lot louder than you think it is. Because the wind is rustling through those leaves, always kind of going like, shh, like there's always some ambient tone. And then generally you'll hear, you know, birds chirping around or other animals, whatever. But so it was very odd when all the sound just seemingly cut out. And the air was just still. And there was no wind, and you could kind of hear maybe the crackle of a little bit of fire kind of starting. And then all of a sudden, all the wind just got sucked in the direction from behind us. And it would just went from like zero to, I promise you, I like got pushed forward. So I want to say like 50 miles an hour. It just like went and went the opposite way. And then it stopped just as fast and went the other way towards us. And now all of a sudden I'm looking, like, it's getting dusty. It's like there's smoke now. The fire these guys started is now like really kicking up. I'm seeing, oh my God, what? It looked like a dragon was shooting fire in the tree canopy above me. I looked up and to the left and saw fire shooting and racing across the canopy. And now I gotta let you guys know, I didn't realize how loud fire can be. If you've ever heard, like, say, a campfire, like the loud snap, crackle, pop of that, or maybe you're in your backyard at a fire pit or whatever, like, that's fairly loud. Like, that's, you know, it's got a good sound to it. But can you imagine when 100-foot trees that are almost shoulder to shoulder in some points are going up like matchsticks? Do you know how loud that is? It sounded like the combined sounds of 6 freight trains. It was a roaring. And now I understand what they mean, like, when they say the fire roared. Like, it was fucking furious. Like, this was earth-shattering. And it was very hard to hear that someone was yelling, run. And I was enraptured because I just saw a fire whirlwind kick up in front of me. Like, thankfully not 4 feet in front of me. This was like, I don't know, 20, 40 yards away, like pretty close, pretty hot. I'm feeling the heat now. Holy shit. And I am now hearing someone yell, run. So this more or less happened to kind of the left of me. So I look right and I see the entire line is running away from me back to the fire buggies. So I take off running towards them. I try to follow as close as I can. And our crew boss is the one who was yelling, run. We piled into the buggy as fast as we could, and guess what? We evacuated off the fucking mountain because they didn't actually know how close the fire was. They said it was 2 miles away. It was 200 yards away, which is not far at all. So the fire that they started combined with the main fire, and we were literally racing for our lives, which is something that they told us after the fact. Like, the other crew boss, not mine, but the other one that was there, he had like 25 years of firefighting experience, and he told us with an ashen face, like scared to death, this was the scariest thing he's ever seen in his life. And it was some of the worst intelligence that he's ever been fed. And he will never work with them again, blah, blah, blah. He kept going. But we got to, so we evacuated the mountain. We drove off of it. We got out of there as quick as we could. And so we staged off to an area, like off to the side, where we could basically wait for further orders. Because, I mean, we're firefighters. We have to presumably go back in. We're not going to just, like, go back to camp. Fuck it, we lost, guys. Like, that's not real life. That's not how that works. So we pull off. And we're waiting for more orders. And we saw a buggy drive right past us. And one side of it was scorched black with soot. And we all just like quietly stared at it. And we're like, holy shit. Like, those guys were behind us. Like, that is some real stuff. And thankfully, they didn't lose. Nobody got burned up. We didn't lose anybody. Lost some equipment. But who cares? That's replaceable. And then we got redirected, and then we had to go cut line all day, just through the mountains. And, yeah, it was a trippy experience. Tune in next time, though. Oh my God, I'm so excited for part three, because I probably have several more stories just for this fire alone. It was an incredibly exciting experience, especially for my first fire. Like, guys, there's dozens upon dozens of really boring fires after this one. So this one I'm pouring a lot of energy into because this one was a pretty crazy fire. But yeah, so we'll go into more informational stuff on those later fires and whatnot. But this one we're wrapping up as far as the episode. So I do hope you tune in next Wednesday because it will be a special episode. And I think it's going to be super fun, guys. But it will be part three of this story of how I first became a firefighter and got sent on to the Mendocino Fire. So thank you for joining me on The Road Less Traveled. Hope to see you next time.